Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
To declare your independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Please, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Fear here and declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, another independence declaring kind of individual, Karen Katowski, Karen Katowski, PhD, she's a retired United States Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, for a farmer, aspiring anarcho-capitalist. She ran for Congress in Virginia's 6th District in 12 and is a fellow at the Eisenhower Media Network. And how we know her, she was at the Pentagon when it got hit by whatever. And she was very critical of the Iraq war even before she left the Pentagon, as she's sitting there as Rumsfeld and Cheney are walking around, whatever. And got to find them all. Who's writing these articles, you know, that went on Colonel Hackworth's site? And I guess they were just misogynists, didn't think it would be that woman sitting there beating the crap out of them intellectually. But she retired. Lieutenant Colonel, she goes out on the farm in, is it Virginia or West Virginia or West Virginia, Western Virginia? What?
Western Virginia, yeah.
Yeah, Western Virginia, I gotta get that right, you know. So she's out there with the horses and so on. She did some teaching, you know, as a college professor. She's been, you know, we want to get right into your article, but what have you been doing? How you know, how's life?
It's good. Been busy. I mean, you know, we've mainly farming, and I do teach some classes, and actually, I teach a online government class for a community college here. So I get local kids. Some of them are in high school. Some are young, and some are adults, like not my age, but just a little bit younger than me. And it's great to get the pulse of
right
what people are thinking. And I've been doing this for like 16 years. And trust me, my message is getting out, Ernie. It's getting out. And it's not necessarily because of you or me or anything. People are observing.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, you know that Anthony Oliver song?
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. The rich men, north of Richmond.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge, right? Well, I actually built that into one of our quizzes. They watch the video and they identify three aspects that the guy's singing about that connects back to what they've learned about the founding, you know, the era of the late 1700s in this country. And they do great. Kids do great. They get it.
From where? You know, personal experience, grandma. They're not getting it from MTV. I mean,
no, they hardly. They're not. But they're getting it. They're getting kind of what life is offering them. And I think it revolves around the money. And I do teach these. I do have a section on the Fed when we get to that point. Most of them never heard of the Federal Reserve. Increasingly, I have kids that do know about it. Ron Paul's been talking about it for 30 years, so it's something some people know about. But it has a lot to do with our money, because the power of the state and its power to create money out of thin air and spend it on war and domestic surveillance and domination, that's its power base. And, of course, it devalues our money, and that's something they know about. They know that the money doesn't buy much. They know that. So it's like there's certain things that touch their lives that then are the – that's the opening. That's the opening for understanding how it all works. And so anyway, it's fun. It's fun. And for the first 10 years of teaching that, it wasn't, I didn't see this. And then I started, it was after Obama left. Because, you know, remember when Obama was elected, a lot of young people were so excited, you know, so excited about hope and change. And then what happened was they all got what we already know, and that nothing changes and it usually gets worse. And they learned that. A lot of these people learned that. So now they're a little more cynical, a little more not so willing to buy the hype. And I'll tell you this, unrelated to maybe where we're going to, but, you know, the lockdowns, these young people remember that very vividly. And you know, their attitude is very much like ours, more so than it is like, let's say, Biden's. And these are not people that would maybe call themselves Republicans, but their attitudes... You know, people instinctively dislike authoritarianism, and we got a big old dose of it a couple years ago. And these young people, you know, they say, oh, well, they'll do it again. We got them to do it once, they'll do it again. And I'm not sure the young people will as much. I think you hit them at the wrong time. The old people might, but I don't think the young people. I think they learned a lesson, and that is that the authoritarians are not looking out for your best interest. They're lying to you. And they can be easily disobeyed. A message that I love.
Yeah, just disobey. It's easy. There is we have one thing that is a project that we're doing, and somebody suggested what was it? It was misobedience. You know, and I'm going, why disobedience? Okay. And he goes, because disobedience means you know and you're just not doing it. Misobedience is you don't care, you know, and you're something. He gave some good definition of it. And so I'm like, all right, you know, I can be disobedient, but normalize disobedience, you know, that kind of attitude. It's interesting that you have this regular exposure to a, you know, somebody that's wanting to learn, you know, they come into community college, you know, take a Karen class, and you have a wider range of ages in the class. What do you see by age? Are the older people, you know, kind of going, yep, you know, I'm going to tell you, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Rodney Dangerfield in Back to School, you know, in the class or something, going to share what he knows? Did he get some that kind of interaction from the generations?
Actually, you know, since it is online, I can't tell who dominates in the discussions because our discussions are extensive, but they're all in writing. So everybody has equal shot, which is kind of good. The quiet people have to, and everybody has to post. So, you know, they participate. The big thing I noticed is that the older people can read and write. I noticed that. The younger people, of course, these are all college-bound kids, for the most part. They're taking college classes in high school, so they're definitely looking to advance their traditional education. So they are the smartest of the kids, or I should say the more competent of the kids in terms of writing and reading, and yet they can't write very well, even the best of them. Only a few really can write at what used to be considered senior, high school senior level. They are reluctant to, all my work is in essay, all the questions and answers, you know, they have to write things. And, you know, they're not as comfortable with really making an argument. It's very difficult. And oftentimes when I ask them to choose a side and debate it on a question, they cannot, and it doesn't matter what side they debate, they're going to get full credit, you know, if they just do it. And they find themselves, they can't decide. They say, well, this is really good. And they're trying to please the teacher or cover all the bases rather than actually thinking what they think makes most sense and then arguing that. They're not in the habit of doing that. And that's because our public schools don't make them do that. They don't even allow them to do that. It's about, we're telling you something and you spit it back to us on a piece of paper. Yeah. And it was always like that. I mean, public school, even I recall, pretty much, you know, here's the stuff, here's what you need to put down on your quizzes or whatever.
Yeah, not repeat.
But nowadays it's worse. And Yeah.
And put a dress on it.
It's
a lipstick and a dress.
It's aimed at indoctrination to one extent, and it's also aimed at making teachers' jobs easier because it is not to do a lot of reading of student work and correcting it. And I don't correct their grammar. I mean, if they don't use punctuation, I'll say, hey, you got to use punctuation. I'll give them that. But I don't go in and like an English teacher and correct everything. But if I did, it would take all my time to do one class. I mean, I would be working on it 8 hours a day. I don't correct it. It's not, I don't see that as my job, but I do get to see where they're at in their writing. Of course, there's some kids, and I get a handful of homeschool kids. Increasingly, I get homeschool kids, and they tend to be a little better readers and writers, a little more able to debate issues and that kind of thing. The other thing I notice, it's just not related to liberty or anything, but you know how they say that a lot of times girls write more and are more able to be verbose,
yeah.
And the boys aren't. I sometimes have that, I sometimes don't. But I will say some of my kids, even the ones who don't write as well or as thoroughly, their instincts still are very, very good. So I'm noticing an improvement in the instincts. That's what I was talking about earlier. I think it's not so much that they're better at this and that, or they even know more history. In fact, they barely remember things that I consider to be normal. They don't even know about it. They don't have any knowledge of it because it's just not in their experience. They got born in the 21st century. So, there's a lot of history they have no idea of. But their instincts are improving. Their instincts are better. And I don't know what's causing that. I don't know. It could be that
we're
getting more homeschool kids. I don't know, but their instincts are better.
We're going to have a really good comparison when we're doing a project in Phoenix when I get back, really pushing some of the videos, documentaries of James Corbett. Because having this kind of knowledge and sharing it and being a Canadian in Japan, what are they going to do? Yell at me for putting the sign up to find my fingerprint on some sign that we did. And I'm okay, bring it. It's going to be interesting to see the impact, because I know it's going to happen. It's what always happens when we do this kind of stuff. The establishment freaks. They do the fact-checking. It's not, you pay no attention, to the man behind the curtain thing. And they're so predictable. Mm-hmm. They can't not. And it seems that there are bureaucrats and sycophants to the state that think they get a shiny badge or a stripe or move up, closer to the podium, in hell or whatever, by challenging this kind of stuff. Look, I told them they were bad, and give me my stripes and make me mayor or some crap like that.
Yeah.
So this is, they're so predictable that way. And I just, prove it on a regular basis just, for entertainment and mental health. But the, which is kind of what Karen does with her writing. Karen has been, how often do you write an article? It seems like every week or two you get pissed off. I mean, when does that happen?
I do get ticked off more than every week, but I don't always write a Lou Rockwell article. But I will say this summer I've been busy with I've given 3 full-length talks. And, of course, I can't talk off the cuff very well because I'm afraid of what I might say. So I write it all down. And but none of those have been published yet. But I'm trying to clean them up, put the links in them, and they're all stuff that I know about, but they all have a different focus. And I just did one last weekend. That'll be the first one I think I'll put out on Lou, on the state of military intelligence. And there's a lot of good anecdotes and history in there. And I gave that down in Nashville two weekends ago, I guess it was, 23rd. It was last Saturday. Yeah, or last Friday. And there were people of all ages in the audience, there were elderly people. Some of the speakers were older. There were older people in the audience. There were younger people. And, but a lot of some of the younger generation talked to me, either corresponded or talked to me after the thing. And they learned stuff from things that I was telling them, not my opinions, but just little events of history that they really had either forgotten or never knew. And so there is a great service to be done in framing out what's already happened. Because if you know what's already happened and you've seen some things that have happened, it's so much easier to understand what's happening today.
Well, that's exactly why
it's not only a mystery, because things are all...
Because things are what?
Things are connected. I mean, it's a continuum. You know, there's nothing in a vacuum. Everything we are, where we are today, is because of where we were, and what we've been through. The world's like that. It's just not. And I think a lot of what they try to teach. In fact, there was a headline in Canada, maybe somewhere, and they said, "Oh, well, we're going to wipe all books that were published before 2008 will be removed from our library." And it's like, wow, you know.
What? Wait. What was the context?
Yeah, yeah.
Who said that? Why did they say that? What?
The context was I can't remember if it was Canada or the northern part of the United States, but they made a recommendation that the librarian would basically go and remove all books that were published prior to 2008. And the reason was, it was woke, driven by wokeness, the idea that, racism, prejudice, anti-LBG, whatever, would be in these older books. And, of course, it wasn't a book burning, you know, it wasn't a Fahrenheit 453, whatever it is.
51.
It was the librarian would have some discretion, so perhaps an encyclopedia could remain. But part of it was to try to – anyway, I think there was big pushback, and it made national headlines for a short time. But that kind of anti – you know, we don't want history. We are unable to – it seems like we're unwilling to put history in context. You know, we say, well, Jefferson had slaves, therefore, you know, it's completely evil. Well, not completely evil, no more evil than you or me or anybody else, but we refuse to, the woke side doesn't want to address, context, and, context is everything, and you can't escape from it. We see this in the Ukraine war, right? I mean, Russia did something and Ukraine is an innocent democracy fighting to save its principles. Okay, let's look at context, and as soon as you start looking at, you know, history and context, then the simple becomes complicated, it becomes real, and then you can form an opinion. And you can say, yeah, I agree with this, I disagree with this, and I hadn't decided on these other things. That's fine. You know, that ambiguity maybe is fine. It's part of being human. But certainly, if you understand history and context, you cannot take the government's word for anything. Because increasingly what we've seen is government messaging that is not, it's completely out of context. And it's all basically orders, using very simple language. And it's using, you know, Orwell is constantly brought up. Well, there's a reason for it. And his new language, you know, newspeak, mm-hmm. that he talked about, I mean, we really see that coming from our government. There are a set of words that are used, and they have meanings. And they don't want it, you know, they don't want... Any explanation or larger discussion or fine tuning. You know, we don't need all these English word language. You know, the English language is filled with words. It's one of the most wordy of all languages. It has words for everything. We really don't need to use all those words. Let's just, you know, put on your mask, shut up. That's what you need to do.
You know, this is the one thing.
The language of government, the language of authority.
When I was, we got a little bit of a delay between us, so we got to suffer it. It's not too bad. But the when I first read junior high or something in the, you know, mid-70s, 1984, I thought it was news speak. You know, when I was reading it, I was just thinking news speak.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of news speak, it wasn't until later, decades later, I go, oh, it was news speak. They're doing, okay, I get it, you know. But news speak, for me, it just put in my head that the news, it was news speak. You know, it's the same, it was news speak from the news, the same thing. But I just had a different, you know, frame of reference of what I was looking at. And it changed my perspective all these years from, yeah, it's news speak. You know, not news speak, but news speak. I always assumed the media was the bad guys, you know?
Yeah, I had the same exact experience. I always thought it was news speak, like the news, and it was a disconnect. But when I realized it was the new language that was being created so that we could not think.
Through the news.
Then, they obviously, yeah. And of course, it's real. it's real. I mean, we're living through it. And you know, when we think about Orwell, I forget what his real name was, but, you know, we think about Orwell, his early books and his experience in the British Empire as an officer of the Empire. You know, he in Burma particularly, he saw things and participated in things that really caused him to rethink all of his assumptions. And then, you know, years later, he produces 1984. You know, it takes a while to figure out what's happening. And you first starts with your eyes getting opened. And Orwell's eyes were opened in the early 1900s, 1910s, post-World War I time frame in Burma. That's when he began to see, you know, the reality of things and how governments really work and how they shape their story so that you'll think it's all good and patriotic when in fact it's not. And it's not particular to the UK, you know.
Right. No, that's one thing that this generation is starting to realize is that it's not a country by country by country thing. It's a country thing. It's a government thing. It's a, you know, come together under one rule because I can, you know, and I rule you because I can, and you're going to be ruled because you're letting us, and, you know, if you're letting us, then you deserve to be ruled because I'm elite and I'm ruling you. So it's just, it's really that fairly simple. One thing, before we get started on your article here, Migromeko Theory by Karen Katowski, that was done September 29th is what we're going to focus on, because I think, man, we get it on, you know, Trump Report with Dr. Frank, he'd explode and you guys would go be best friends and whatever is all he talks about all the time. So this is one thing that I wanted to share with you. You know Keith Knight, right? Don't tread on anyone. Do you know Keith?
I'm not sure.
He's done, you know, he's a young guy. About 27, 28, was a progressive. He went hardcore libertarian anarchist. He's got his own show, and he comes on our show, and he's been on, you know, with James Corbett quite a bit, and he's very well read. Oh, he's now the editing whatever the heck at the Libertarian Institute with Scott Horton, that guy, okay? So it's been... he's really well read. Well, he got contacted by Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks wanting to be interviewed, you know, by an anarchist libertarian to talk about his book of Can't We All Get Along or something. I didn't know it, but at the same time, there's a guy named Egberto Willis, which is a black talk show host, progressive, wrote a book. It's worth it. How to talk to your right-wing friends, neighbors, and family or something, right? And as if, you know, because they need a talking to, that kind of thing. So at the same time, they had approached me wanting to interview him. So I interview
something
him and then find out that he's in jail.
What it is ain't exactly clear.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
USA News Update. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says what Hamas has done in Israel is unforgivable.
The savage attacks that Hamas perpetrated against innocent Israelis are mind-boggling. Slaughtering families in their homes, massacring hundreds of young people at an outdoor festival.
The death toll nears 1,200 with thousands injured on both sides. The White House reports at least 11 Americans among the dead. Amidst the ongoing conflict in Israel, U.S. airlines like American, United, and Delta have halted flights to Tel Aviv. The decision aligns with travel advisories from the U.S. State Department, which cite concerns over potential terrorism and civil unrest in the region. This week, a vote is scheduled to determine the next House Speaker. Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise have both thrown their hats into the ring. Following 2 days of discussions, the vote may take place as early as Wednesday. John Schaefer, USA News.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. shopsupertea.com.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
Your independence on the Free Talk Live Network is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is a cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Let's talk about your positive experiences using Dash. Dash has transaction fees that are less than 1 cent. Dash transactions are instant, irreversible, and are protected from 51% attacks by its chain locks technology. Dash is the world's first decentralized autonomous organization. BitRefill allows for discounted purchases at national retailers. We want to thank Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use. Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
He's really well read. Well, he got contacted by Cenk Uygur of the Young Turks wanting to be interviewed, you know, by an anarchist libertarian to talk about his book of Can't We All Get Along or something. I didn't know it, but at the same time, there's a guy named Egberto Willis, which is a black talk show host, progressive, wrote a book. It's worth it. How to talk to your right-wing friends, neighbors, and family or something, right? And as if, you know, because they need a talking to, that kind of thing. So at the same time, they had approached me wanting to interview him. So I interview him and then find out that he did Cenk. And I'm going, These progressives don't take a dump without a memo or somebody telling them what to do, okay? So for them to seek out anarchist libertarians to, you know, express themselves and promote their books and can't we all just get along, I saw a pattern. I'm seeing what's going on here. You got the Kamala Harris's and the Biden's and the far left of purple hair, can't decide what gender they are people, and they want to separate themselves from that because they're seeing that ship's going down. When Disney starts to give up on ESG and, you know, diversity and equity and inclusiveness and all this other stuff, you know, Bud Light gets their, you know, nose punched, and then you have Target. I mean, all this stuff, they're starting to, rats are leaving the ship. And these guys want to, oh, no, we're not those bat crap crazy people. We can work with you, especially at the time when RFK Jr. was, you know, floating the Led Zeppelin that he wanted to go Libertarian Party. So all of this, I could see it, that they're, the big giant cracks are turning into chasms, and they're starting to abandon the brown shirts that wrote them in the office. And what they don't realize, and certainly they're starting to realize now, is that when Hitler came into power with all of this kind of organized support that he had, they were the first ones that they, you know, got excommunicated from the government. You know, then they're going like Black Lives Matter. Hey, I got you to the dance, and I need to get mine of kind of whatever. And they cut them off. And I can see that starting to happen now, and they didn't anticipate that. They thought they were going to rule for the next 1,000 years or something. And what they came up against was Merca. Now, in your article, you know, my Gromyko theory, first we've got to talk about who Gromyko was, but the and in this article, you're bringing in what happens with, you know, Michelle Obama. Where did the mouthpieces of the CIA, you know, come from, and what are they saying? What is the new, you know, Hillary effort? You know, was Obama in charge of Biden White House since the beginning anyway? Was there, where are we going? What's going to happen? America prevails. And this is going through the process that you did here, and what you think the future is going to be goes a lot on context, like you've been talking about, on what has happened before, the cycles that we go through and so on. So I want to go from beginning to end and make sure we get in the sentiment, the realization, the parallels in history, the what you've expressed in your article. Because I really thought this article, I'm going, ooh, get Karen on, man, we're going to do it. Okay, so this is, especially since we have a delay here of a few seconds, I want to go ahead and turn it over to you. If you got your article in front of you, I wanted you to just go paragraph by paragraph and explain what you're talking about, and I'll inject when I feel like it. But, you know, would you do that? First off, tell everybody who Gromyko was, you know, first, so that'd help.
Yeah. Well, Gromyko was the guy that ran the Soviet Union, the head of the Communist Party, just before Gorbachev came in, and of course just before the time frame of the collapse of the Soviet Union, which Gorbachev oversaw and actually, you know, accelerated, I guess, in some ways. But that centralist, communist, socialist construction was on its way out. I mean, it fell from within. But anyway, prior to the actual ending of the Soviet Union, they went through a series of elderly chairmen of the Communist Party there, bought their top dog, and they were old and they were sick and alcoholic, and nobody paid any attention to them other than they could see them. Chernenko is Biden is my Chernenko, and Chernenko was the guy right before Gromyko, and he served for less than a year. Of course, Biden served longer, but he didn't say very much, and he was kind of heavily controlled. He was sick in the hospital half the time, but he was the top dog. And then Gromyko came along, and they put him in. And, of course, they didn't have elections, except amongst the top communist leadership. You know, they chose their leader. Anyway, they chose Gromyko, and Gromyko was not sick, and he was a little younger, and he was articulate. Kind of reminded me of Hillary, but or any of the ones the Democrats hope to put in front of, you know, or right after Biden. And, of course, the first step is what we saw with David Ignatius's op-ed in the New York Times just recently, and he's considered to be a deep state CIA spokesperson because of his connections there and the history of his writings and his op-eds and his opinions. They all basically speak for the deep state. So when Ignatius speaks, it's like the CIA is speaking. And what he said was, in his op-ed a few weeks ago or a week and a half ago, was that Biden, we love you. He spent three paragraphs on how great Biden was. Oh, you've done everything you promised. You're just Mr. Wonderful. But you and Kamala, he included Kamala in this, cannot run. You need to tell us in the Democratic Party and the deep state that you are not running so that we can round up an electable person, because we don't know what the we don't know if we can get rid of Trump or not. We don't know how. You know, if you pick another Republican, and then we've got this thing going on with RFK. Now, he didn't say that in his op-ed, but that's kind of how the Democratic Party is thinking right now. They're very concerned because Biden is so unpopular and so unpredictable that and Kamala the same way. Except Kamala is not unpredictable, but she's equally unpopular. Anyway, so got a big problem. He needs to step down. And this is what Ignatius told him. He was a loyal Democrat, and he said it in the front page or the top editorial page of the New York Times. So he is messaging Biden step down. So, you know, to me, as a conspiracy theorist, hey, CIA conspiracy theorist, to me, when a CIA mouthpiece advises you to do something, that's not an advice. That's a threat. Okay, that means, like, you know, we have ways.
All right. Let's talk about that, you know, a little bit about Ignatius. Now, one, CIA mouthpiece David Ignatius, you know, blah, blah, blah. You went on here. I remember, God, this was only less than a week ago or so, less than a couple of weeks. And he comes out and he goes, you know, we gotta bite the bullet, and everybody, you know, you need somebody to give you a red light siren. Well, I'm the guy, okay? And I'm the guy, because I'm the guy. And I'm the guy telling you, you know, openly that we got to abandon Biden. Biden is done. We got to do something to get, you know, he did his part. He saved us from Trump. Not that election fraud thing. We won't talk about that. But, you know, Biden saved us from the orange man, and he did his part. You know, go, vaya con Dios, man, right into the sunset, and we got to do something else. Well, for him, that guy, to do that, that was, like you say, that was not friendly advice. It was, you want to be part of the machine, you will do this, say this, take on this, we're going to, and that was one thing that with the Young Turk Cenk, you know, did the same thing. You could see the timing of it. It was like 2 weeks ago, they made they didn't make the decision before, but they made the decision to go public. We are abandoning the idea of a Biden-Harris ticket for the Democrats. Well, this is also at the time that RFK Jr. is like, all right, screw you guys. You know, you're definitely not gonna, you're not gonna. So he's, you know, flirted running on the Libertarian Party ticket, and I know, you know, that mess goes, so, you know, never mind. But, so now he's gonna do as an independent. Well, he's got another big, giant, you know, hoe to row there. But, row to hoe. So what happens is, now we're looking at what is next. And that's kind of where I see your article coming in.
Right.
Did you write this after, you know, did Ignatius kind of trigger this, or did you already have these ideas before?
No, I'll tell you what triggered it. It was, I saw an article, this is after the Ignatius piece, but not too far after, where Hillary Clinton, and this was mainstream, you might have seen it, Hillary Clinton gets up and talks about how the Clinton Foundation is going to invest side by side with BlackRock in the rebuilding and reconstruction of Ukraine, which of course is a huge, you know, they're going to do with to Ukraine what they did to Haiti, you know.
Exactly.
But whatever.
But little white girls that they can traffic even better, you know.
Yeah. Well, so Hillary's up there, and I looked at the pictures, and I actually watched a video, too, of her getting an award at the State Department. And she is dressed for success. Now, we know Hillary, and her hair changes all the time, and she's used to wear these weird pantsuits, you know, and she probably still does wear those. But basically, it struck me how presentable she looked. Her surgeries, her facelift type stuff. Everything's looking good. It's all healed up. She's presenting herself as not a radical lefty because, you know, that's how she gets votes. I mean, she got votes in 2016 from Republicans who didn't like Trump. It's totally understandable how she got more popular votes than Trump did. I mean, because you talk about all the Democratic machine votes, but then you also had anti-Trump Republicans who saw neocons, who saw Hillary, much as they will see her today, as a serious pro-war, pro-defense statesman slash, deep state front person. She fits that bill perfectly. Now, I was concerned. I thought, well, you know, she's a little older. We really don't want old people. And plus, I mentioned this before I wrote the article. I mentioned it to a couple people that I know, friends, conservative friends. They go, oh, my God, no, that would never happen. Everybody hates Hillary. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. They do. They do. And so in my article, I make a point to say she's unlikable and she's not liked. However, Democrats have a huge, huge problem. They have several huge problems. Their lead guy Biden has to step down. He will lose. He's unpopular. And if he loses, the Democratic Party will not regain the voters that leave. Because, you know, once you break party, you know, once you vote a different party, if you're a party voter, if you are a voter and you think you're a party, not an independent, but you think, oh, I'm a Republican or oh, I'm a Democrat, and you cross the line at some point in some vote, once you do that one time, you know, you've got the learning curve is flat. You can do it again. You can do it again. You can do it again because you've broken the whole guilt thing, party loyalty thing that they put on you. So if a Democrat votes not for a Democrat, let's say he votes for the independent RFK, or as we've seen with Trump's great power, his populism, many Democrats voted for Trump in the red states for sure and elsewhere. So they've already broken with their loyalty oath to the Democrats. So this is the world that the parties live in. They can't count on party, you know, loyalists because there's very few of those anymore. So this is the Democrats' problem. So they need a top line vote getter. That's why they float Michelle, because her name's Obama. But the problem is Michelle's not a politician, and unfortunately he has a problem that will make her a laughing stock. So she's not
an option. The memes will just proliferate like you wouldn't believe.
The memes will go nuts.
You know, I don't even know why they would even float that. All it does is demonstrate that Obama opened up office in D.C. and has been running the show from behind anyway. So this is...
Well, for sure. There's so many problems with the Michelle thing. And plus, Michelle doesn't want it, doesn't need it. She would be so much of a front person, so much of a puppet of Obama that even the Democrats, I don't think, would go for it. So the other name, let's just talk about the Democrats' hopes, because my Gromyko theory is that the Communist Party, you know, the deep state of America has gone through, at least in the last 4 years, a Chernenko candidate. Who comes after Chernenko? Because the system is not quite ready to break yet. It is breaking politically and in many other ways, but it's not quite broken yet. So they want to put in somebody who can right the ship of state. So who can do that? Well, it's going to be, for the Democrats, it can't be Trump. So Trump, they've got, you know, how many, what, 4 or 5 lawsuits, you know, how many different court cases will he be in throughout the whole campaign? Right. So they're working on, and this has working too, because first off, they're hitting Trump where it hurts in so many different ways. And many Republicans and even Trump supporters, the hardcore Trump supporters are going to vote for him. We're going to write him in out of spite just because of the way they've treated him. But, you know, he gets his mugshot, you know, was a campaign. Who ever heard of a mugshot being a campaign?
It was awesome. You know, we predicted that. I go, hey, get awesome. That mugshot finally. I want that on something. So when it happened, true to my word.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
I got my sons all the Mark Dice one that had, you know, the height lines behind them, you know. And it, so I got that and said, wanted president 2024. So I got it for my both my sons, my two sons-in-laws, and one for Frank, you know. And I go, there. And I had it sent to my daughter. It probably cost me $160 or something. But I'm like, nope, give me. Because I promised on the air, I go, you get a mugshot, I'm buying something. That has got to be just out of principle, because screw them. Because I don't vote. I don't care. You know, nobody's my ruler, so I don't give a crap. But the way that they've been doing this, they have to pay. This is just stupid.
I know. Well, that's right. And actually, in this article, in this Gromyko article that we're talking about here, there's a link. If people don't want to read anything, which I don't blame them one bit, there is a link in the middle of the thing. It's a pro-Trump rap video. And it's so hilarious. It is so hilarious. And they made a video about the woman in Atlanta or someplace down in Georgia, the attorney down there.
That, yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
She indicted like 19 people. And there's a hilarious rap video. It's just so fun. But anyway, yeah, so Trump has been great in maintaining his support throughout all this stuff. But there is a problem because there are those more staid and well-dressed Republicans in the party. And there's certainly the neocons who hate him. Okay, that's well-known. But some of those neocons that hate him are being joined by others who are just sick of all the drama. They don't like the drama. And so they are hoping that one of these other Republicans who are running will emerge, as somebody they can vote for. And if you notice, we have several neocons running. I mean, you've got Pence, you've got Christie, you've got what's her face from South Carolina. Actually, she's running pretty well, and they're all neocons, pro-war neocons. So there's lots of Republican traditional type. I say traditional, neoconservative-type Republicans, like we've seen for the past 35, 40 years, who could step in and be a Republican. Now, the problem is Trump's base is not going to go off. Trump's base is going to stay with him regardless. They'll either stay home, they'll write him in, or they may vote for the opposite of the Republican because they're so mad at the party for not, taking care of him. This actually can equate to some votes for Bobby Kennedy in some respects. And, of course, Bobby's positions, which leads us into the next problem for the Democrats, and that's Bobby Kennedy, because Bobby Kennedy is, like he says he is, he holds the views of a 1960s and 70s Democrat. So that actually looks a lot like what Republicans used to be. You know, if anybody's ever, taken a look at JFK's policies.
Yeah, he's crazy freaking right winger now,
Well, he seems like it, doesn't he? I mean, when you look at it, when we look back, we say, oh my gosh, was this guy a Republican? No, he wasn't. He was a Democrat because Democrats used to have some sense. And they did, obviously they have, differences, the two parties, but they've been merging for decades and decades. Actually, I'm talking, 60 years, the parties have become a uniparty. And, but Bobby, harkens back to that thing. And it is popular. It's popular amongst, even Trump supporters. So if they don't have Trump, depending on if they find out what Bobby stands for, they might like it. Anyway, so Democrats have a big problem. First off, they don't know if the Trump people will vote Republican. They know they won't vote for the Democrat, but they might vote for Bobby. They have to plan for a three-way race no matter what, maybe a four-way. Now, if it's a three-way, this is my prediction, and I could be totally wrong. Obviously, I have no idea. But if it's a three-way or a four-way race, I think anybody in the that's a mainstream Democrat can get the 35% of the votes that they'll need. They'll get it. Just like the last time we elected a Clinton, it was a three-way race. And, we had George Herbert Walker Bush, and then we had, our Reform Party, Ross Perot, who, pulled in, I think, a number of electoral votes. He was on the ballot pretty much everywhere. He won some states, best showing for a third party candidate we've had in, I think, the 20th century. He did well. And what happened was we got the Arkansas governor, the sax player, was our president. And that wouldn't have happened if we'd hadn't split the conservative vote. That's what's going to happen this time. So I think the people that are Democrats who want to be Democrats and they want to own the deep state, which it really is a neocon, mostly Democrat, neocon Republican organization anyway. Those guys, all they need is a person who can pull some of the consolidate the neoconservative vote, pull the loyalist Democrats, and that's all they need. 35-40% they'll have it. Because we're going to split the vote, and the Libertarians are going to run their own candidate, and Libertarians will do well this year, I think, too. Unfortunately, that won't help Bobby Kennedy, but it doesn't matter. There's going to be people voting for lots of different parties, and increasingly we've seen that anyway. But I think this time, because of what they've done to Trump, there's a huge wild card with the Trump voter. The Trump voter is angry at what the Democrats have done, so they're not going to say, oh, well, I'll vote Democrat. I'll go back to voting Democrat. Because, Trump got Democratic votes. They're not going to do that this time. And Democrats have miscalculated terribly with what they've done. I don't understand this totalitarianism that we have from the Democrats. It is backfiring. But all that being said, in a 3 or 4-way race, the Democrats can do it. All they need is a front person. But they can't do it with the California governor being their front person because he's too left. But if they had Hillary with Newsom, I think they could. People would say, "Oh, there's an adult ticket. There's a caring Democrat ticket." And then all the military industrial complex.
Who are these people you think that are seduced by that ticket?
Well, a lot of look. People that vote aren't thinkers. A lot of most people. If you actually think about it, you wouldn't vote, right? So.
I'm thinking.
People who vote are the people that are, I know, yeah. So the people who vote and the people who will vote for Democrats are much like have always voted. They have a vote producing machine in the urban areas that can deliver to you. They can deliver to any candidate.
Yeah,
even
big
the worst
stack
one,
of paper.
Probably.
Woo, we got a big stack. We're going to put it in the box.
Well, I mean, they can deliver 35 million votes without even blinking an eye. In the urban areas, the devoted Democrat voter who hates Trump and hates Republicans, who always votes Democratic, those votes they can count on. But the Republicans can only count on maybe 20 million.
It's obvious. The unthinkable is going to happen soon. With all the distractions in the media, we probably won't see it coming. Your gut tells you there's something very wrong going on, and all the evidence suggests that there is. Those in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing, but you know better. American families are preparing. Folks are getting into self-reliance and investing in emergency food storage. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, is the place you can trust. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save 25%, plus get free shipping on all their 3-month emergency food kits. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today. Order by 3 p.m., and your items ship the same day. It's time to prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is the perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American Funding now and see how much cash out you can get. Call 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. That's 800-721-2477. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.